Sophie, and welcome to MILF Talk, Make Your Life Fabulous, where we like to talk about anything from parenting and money issues to sex and dating. I'm a psychologist, life coach, author, and mother of two. And once again, like last episode, I'm flanked by hotness. I've got Todd Anderson to my left and the handsome doctor to my right, whom I must give a proper introduction. Dr. Verity hails from New York, but currently practices in Santa Monica. In 2005, he and his wife, the beautiful and talented Dr. Pamela Verity, founded the Dynamic Learning and Listening Center, where they work with individuals and families seeking to improve social, emotional, and cognitive functioning. And they have two lovely twin boys.
Twin boys.
And how old are they now?
They will be 16 on July 6th.
What?
Yeah. It happens.
Mm.
Wow.
I'm still youthful, though.
You seem very youthful.
Damn youthful. Looking good.
Yeah, how about
don't worry. Pamela knows I'm harmless, right?
Yes.
Okay, good. He's just so cute. What are you going to do? All right. So, ladies and gentlemen, Jackson Verity. Woo! And ladies and gentlemen, let's hear it once again for Todd Anderson in the Peanut Gallery.
Yes. Give it up. Give it up for me.
Yeah. All right. I like the applause. It kind of gets things going.
Yeah. It's nice. Exciting.
So, actually, today we're going to talk about kind of a touchy subject.
Uh-oh.
Well, I mean,
touchy?
I think of it as touchy because I think that we as adults have the same problem.
Oh,
okay, you
yes.
know what I'm saying? So it's really talk about having to model behavior. Mm-hmm. Very, 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 very difficult.
Yes.
Okay, because my phone is in my face way too much, mm-hmm. And sometimes we're on our phones parenting the other kids. You know, like it happens. You know, you're parenting one kid and people think you're ignoring them, but you're actually parenting the other kid, making sure they have a ride. You know. So anyway, the subject today is devices, iPhones,
technology.
iPads, technology, yeah. Internet, mm-hmm. you know, boundaries. My goodness,
yep.
It's really, really, really challenging
yes,
these
is.
Days. It's mm-hmm. pretty intense.
Podcasts.
I know.
Yeah.
Damn you people for
yeah,
listening to this.
This
get off your phones.
Stop it. Pay attention
stop
to your
Stop listening.
Children.
Jeez. Your kid's over there building a rocket, and you're just sitting here listening to my ass. That's
yeah.
terrible. Knock it off.
Actually, a rocket wouldn't be so, bad.
Yeah,
a
rocket.
Right.
Yeah,
why? Well, definitely. If they're building a rocket, stop paying
yeah.
attention to me. Jeez. All right. So so Jackson has some help he wants
help?
To impart. Yeah, you're going to solve this problem. You're going to solve this problem.
Fix
for
it. Fix
yeah,
our
aren't you the
lives.
Fixer of all things? Again,
yeah.
remember, he and his wife, both doctors of psychology,
right.
they have perfect children.
Sure. Well, you know, it's interesting.
Your children never text at the dinner table.
I'll tell you. No, they don't. But I do have, but you know, it's interesting because you know they're twins, but they're
yeah.
very different from each other. And
yeah.
I have one who is, I would say, kind of a moderate user of
mm.
technology. You know, he has a phone, and you know, he texts, and he also, you know, watches videos on his phone, and he has a computer, and he does that.
Yeah.
But very moderate because he's really active. He's very much into skateboarding and lacrosse, and he really gets out there. And then I have another son who's, I would say, more than, you know, moderate to strongly moderately
mm-hmm.
involved. I mean,
yeah.
he's a big gamer. He likes to be in front of that computer gaming. And then he also does the texting and the phone and
yeah.
all that stuff.
Yeah.
So I really see, you know, and one, it's kind of easy to kind of get him off of his things. And the other one, it's more of a challenge. So I really do see, I kind of have, you know, a little laboratory, you know, at home.
Yeah. Yeah, I actually have, my boyfriend's sons have very similar dynamic. One is more moderate user, likes to be physical. The other is he likes to game, so he's on it a lot. And it's technically kind of social for him because he's gaming with people in other
right.
parts of the world
right.
or whatever.
Sure.
But it's addicting.
Pros and cons.
Yeah.
Know, and there was I mean it's already now. I think you know it's an old study, but in 2010 the Kaiser Family Foundation did a study on. They were looking at kids sort of from 8 to 18 and the amount of time they're exposed to media,
oh
and the amount
God,
of time
I'm
media
mm-hmm.
that they're consuming.
Yeah. yeah.
And in 2010, it was like 7.5 hours a day
Whew.
Of just, you know, which is like a full work day. And right. Actually, what's interesting...
7.5 hours a day of...
Media, combination of TV,
Twitter, Facebook, and
texting,
TV, yeah.
Computers,
that's a lot.
Handheld
that's
devices,
a lot of input, man.
Video games, all of that stuff. And what's even more frightening is that if you go ahead and you look at sort of multitasking media,
yes.
right, where they're sitting and they're watching TV, but they're also on Instagram at the same time.
I've seen it.
Then they're looking at close to 11 hours a day, squeezing in 11 hours a day of media. So it's just this constant
input
being bombarded by this stimulation. It's just not such a good thing.
That doesn't sound like a good thing.
No. Well, okay, so tell us the main issues you think that level of stimulation causes. Because really, if we're all honest, it's really endemic. I mean, yeah. it's everywhere.
Well, like a lot of things, it depends on the age and the stage. First of all, it's suggested that, nowadays, kids, you see babies with these devices.
Oh, yeah.
Kids are like born with a silver iPhone in their mouth. And
that sounds dangerous.
It
you shouldn't
sound.
Put it in
no,
the mouth.
No.
It's electric.
But everything goes in the mouth when
when you're
right.
a baby. Yeah.
No, my 2-year-old knows how to find an app. I mean, she's not my 2-year-old. Sorry, right. my 2-year-old niece.
No.
I love her.
Yeah.
But yeah, she'll find an app.
You know,
actually,
the American Academy of Pediatrics suggests that you don't even give children who are under 2 electronic devices. And there have been longitudinal studies shown that when you do give kids that age. Computers and electronic devices, it tends to affect attention and learning. And you do show up with a lot of ADHD type responses from that.
Right.
Just because of we learn, our brains are being wired during that time. And
sure.
we need to learn how the real world works, not how to push a button and not just how to, to be constantly, stimulated.
Mm-hmm.
And so that constant overstimulation is not a good thing, especially for, really, really young kids. And then after that, 1 to 2 hours, that's what they're saying, 1 to 2 hours
God.
A day of media.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of appropriate. And then
well, with my son, who's 8, we do limit everything. I mean, and he was, there's social pressures, too. He does not have a phone. He's not on social networks at this point, which... we're sort of insisting on, and he
right.
has an Xbox and got very angry at me because he wanted to do Xbox Live, where you compete with
right.
like strangers. And I said, no, I'm not letting you have relationships with strangers through a video game.
Right.
Especially because I know that a lot of those types of users can be very, very cruel
right.
when, communicating with each other about somebody screwing up in a game or whatever. And I didn't want him to be exposed to that. But
yeah,
he
it's not even about
that.
Predators. It's about
no,
the razzing
about,
and the whole
yeah,
thing, the,
it's just
the
about
language.
Assholes.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
But he has friends who do it, like who are his age who do it. So there's a lot of social pressure to,
right.
and the thing that we're trying to figure out. Because he, we did get him the Xbox eventually, but after his friends had already been, and he was playing it at his friends' houses and stuff, and so we gave it to him. But we're trying to figure out, that balance of, when, it's social pressure, because you don't want him to be out of touch with everybody. You
right.
want him to be able to relate
sure.
to people.
Right, but
at
other
the same
parents
time,
can't decide your boundaries.
Right,
and that's
yeah,
really
exactly.
what it comes down to,
yeah,
right?
Well, I think what you're saying is, you don't want to treat your kid like he's Amish.
Right, exactly.
And have absolutely nothing, not that there's anything
wrong.
Well,
I was just
going to
say, not that there's anything wrong
you
with being Amish.
You can say whatever you want about the Amish yeah. because they don't listen to podcasts.
Yeah.
That's true.
Amish or Mennonite or any of those fine folks. No, the point is it's balance like anything else. And the problem right now is that we are overstimulating our kids. Or not, but the kids are being overstimulated. And what happens is that then, compared to playing the game, life is boring.
And slow.
And everything is boring.
Yeah.
You hear that, I'm bored.
Remember when
I'm
going
bored.
To the market was exciting?
Right.
That is not exciting anymore.
Kids are bored so easily. And they feel as though if I'm not, plugged in, then nothing is good. And that's the real danger.
Yeah.
Or that one is... of the real dangers. And they're becoming literally, I mean, addicted. You know, what happens is that, you know, especially with video games, I mean, it happens with all types of media, but especially with video games, you are, when you're playing, you know, the reward system of your brain is lighting up like a Christmas tree, you know, and you're getting these little packages of dopamine that, you know, shooting into the brain, this feeling of like, wow, that's cool, wow, that's great, wow. And it comes because of the novelty of the game. There's so much going on.
Yeah.
And so when you start getting those that fix of dopamine over and over and over again, you want to do that. And when you stop doing that, you crash. You come down from it. And so that one of the reasons why that is, you know, so dangerous is because it's just – it's like getting hooked on.
Yeah, and I think that when you start – like, because I think everybody goes through it. There's a point where they go, oh, my God, my kid's playing too many video games. You know, it creeps up on you, right? And then all of a sudden you're like – my kid's never coming out of his room. you have to substitute it a little bit. You have to say you're going to stop playing video games and you're going to go outside and you're going to skateboard.
Right.
Or you're going to go, like, you know, you're going to go do something physically.
And what happens is that in doing that, in suggesting that, you will see that kids, you know, depending on the kid, they will react, you know, certain ways, and depending on how hooked in and how plugged in they are, they're going to react, you know, much more aggressively, or it's going to be the end of the world, or.
And you have to know that that's literally you're watching withdrawal symptoms,
right?
Right, and if you can find your compassion place a little bit, and know like, wow, okay, this is just a sign, even more that this really is necessary. Like if your kid's really freaking out about not playing video games, that is not a time to give into it. That's a time to go, wow, this is pretty serious, right? I mean, this is really painful for them to give this up and kind of scary and, you know.
Aren't there like rehab clinics for video game addicts in like Japan and stuff
that? Absolutely. Yeah, really? In Japan, in South Korea, in China, a lot of the Asian world. I think maybe perhaps because there aren't as many outside activities and you know, being on the computer and gaming is one of the few things that can be done. And you know, Todd brought up before about the the social aspect of media and of gaming and of even Facebook and all that kind of stuff. It is important. However, we used to worry about how, like people who use like social media and is it that they're not going to be able to make friends and
right, they're just going to kind of live in this digital bubble and become agoraphobic and
part of the early studies, that were done in the 90s, said that that it kind of makes you sort of asocial, but I think some of that had to do with the types of people who
were drawn to it,
early adopters of technology, the sort of, geeky kind of, folks who really weren't very social to begin with. And so there was a lot of, fear about that.
Yeah, what's that sample called? Like, you learn it in like sixth grade math or whatever. It's a particular kind of sample for a survey. It's sort of, you can't. It's not really accurate because the sample is
kind of skewed.
It's skewed, yes, but it's those that are drawn to it.
Right. But you know what? Social media is—it's not a good place to make friends, but it can be a good place to sort of keep friends.
Yes, and stay connected.
Right. But it's the balance. It's finding the balance. I mean, how much time and is it taking away from the rest of your life? That's really the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Is that are you not? You know, we're seeing that other activities are going down. I mean, reading. It keeps going down.
What's
and down
that?
And down, right? What's right? And people will claim, my kids too, especially, like, I'm reading online.
Yeah. I make that claim too. I do.
I am proud of this element of my parenting is my kid does read. But it's like when the video game goes off and he complains about being bored, I'm like,
go read a book.
Go read a book or go play. And then, he does it on his own. He pick something, and then he'll just read.
And I don't want to make it seem like, and again, we're talking about video games right now, that it's all bad. I mean, there are good things about,
and they're not going anywhere.
No.
So, let's not pretend we're going to eliminate them
future
generations.
Strengthen, hand-eye coordination really good. It can, help with, peripheral vision.
Problem-solving, creativity.
And again, being able to, threat assessment and, you know, and quickly and efficiently.
And there's some games where they literally design their own games and their own, you know, they really get deeply involved.
Right. My kid loves Minecraft.
Minecraft, things like that, world building and stuff. It's a cool thing.
Like anything else, but it really does come down to the amount of time.
Yeah, moderation.
Now, here's an interesting thing, and this is kind of a callback to what we were talking to before. You were saying when we were talking about, you know, parenting and teaching respect and all those things, and you were saying there's no fear anymore, mm-hmm. you know, because, I mean, and thank goodness, okay, we don't want to be big, ugly, scary parents. You know, there's a lot of fallout from being that kind of parent, mm-hmm. you know. So, but there sure as hell is fear of losing your iPhone or not getting to play video games.
Right.
I mean, the one useful thing about this to me seems to be it's the one hot item.
You're absolutely
you
right.
You know, I mean, back in the day, you could say no TV. Whatever.
No, you're absolutely right. And it's what we do have.
We
to
actually
hold
have
over the heads of our kids
it's
and our teenagers.
It's kind of valuable.
And,
you know?
Absolutely. And they come to think of it as theirs. Well, it's my phone. You can't.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I let them know about who pays the bill.
That's right. Me too.
And even
if they chip in for the bill, I still paid for the damn phone. And it's
right.
And it's my house.
You're right. So that is, it is, we do have some control over there.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I think also the problem is that, you know, kids have computers, they've got screens, they've got TVs in their rooms.
I think we don't have that.
Because when he gets to the point where he's using a computer, I mean, we're going to keep it communal.
Yeah, right. There's no reason to not keep it in a public space.
Really very, very important. So that, number one.
Because, well, yeah, there's
you
a lot of want to know what they're doing.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
And if that means somebody can't watch TV while they're doing their homework on the computer, so be it.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's
you know,
no big
or
deal.
Or use your headphones on your phone and you watch your YouTube videos. Like, right, there's always ways around this.
You know,
it also
brings up to mind, you know, devices. You know, you find households that have devices in every room.
Uh-huh.
And the other problem that I see as a psychologist that people don't learn. Do you remember, I grew up, I had a sister, we had one TV. You know, if somebody wanted to watch a show, then you'd have to watch that show.
Right.
And then you'd have to wait for your turn.
Right, you learn
and
a little cooperation.
Exactly. Whereas in most homes today, if you don't want to watch that show, you don't have to. You turn around and you go into another room, or you go onto your, you watch Netflix on your iPhone or iPad or something like that.
Yeah.
So what happens is that we don't learn how to cooperate. We don't learn how to delay our own gratification. We don't learn how to share.
No, especially in, in beautiful Southern California with the beautiful neighborhoods and the families of four living in 8,000 square foot houses, and everybody's got their own little pod with their own little entertainment center.
Right.
And, the family just doesn't interact.
Because
they don't need to.
It's easier that way. We're entertaining ourselves to death.
Yeah.
We really are.
We really are.
And it's all about so much of the day and so much of our life is about entertainment.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to turn it off.
It's really hard to turn it off. And it becomes, then what happens is then when you get habituated to it, it becomes, again, a need. It goes from being this sort of, you know, dessert kind of cherry on the cake to this, well, this is just part of my day. This is what I need. This is what I have to have.
Right.
And it's because of the ubiquity. It's everywhere.
Right.
It's everywhere. And it's so easy.
Well, and there is a parallel there with, you know, sort of snack food and junk food and sodas and everything just kind of being so readily available. It's so normal. The parents actually put little mini sodas into their kids' lunches every day. And, you know, it just becomes nothing's ever a treat anymore.
Right.
Everything.
I'm not allowed to do that at my school.
Dessert all day long.
My kids' school.
No, well, that's a really unique. Your school has like the 12 grams of sugar rule or something like that.
Yeah, and it can't be, like Twinkies and crap like that.
Yeah, and it's
well, I think it's interesting, you know, when you look at the nutritional, you use the nutritional model. I think it's important. It's like, what are you putting into your body? What are you putting into your brain?
Right.
What is, a part of that 7.5 hours, which is ridiculous, but also what makes that up? And, you know, there have been a lot of studies done about, a lot of people are concerned about just sort of violence in the media, and especially with, you know, violent video games and first-person shooter games, and people wondering about, you know, somebody picks up an assault rifle and wipes out people.
Yeah.
Then they go, well, they were, you know, playing video games, and so that's...
Well, I mean, you're a doctor. Does that argument hold water at all?
Well, here's the thing. If you are predisposed to that kind of thing, then yes. If you are predisposed to being a sociopath, sure.
That's the other argument. It's not like helping. Movies don't make serial killers. They just make serial killers more creative.
Right, or more efficient.
More efficient, yeah. Right.
I mean, you really have to have a high amount of risk factors and a low amount of protective factors in order for it to turn really bad.
You know what I think we need? We need a video game that teaches empathy.
Well, there are. And I do think that's important. And you can learn empathy.
You think you can learn it?
Yeah, I think you can learn it.
I mean,
it
I think you learn it.
Kinds of games. Yeah. The only thing I just want to add is that having said that, you know, it's really not going to turn you into a serial killer, it does, and it has been shown, to increase aggressive behavior.
Sure. Mm.
So I don't think, especially with the amount of time spent, it increases aggressive behavior. It desensitizes.
That's my issue, is the desensitization is what worries me.
And that absolutely happens. So you wind up seeing things happen, and especially as, you know, these virtual worlds become more and more like the real world, and, 3D, and, you know, it really gets difficult to be able to kind of separate, this virtual reality from reality.
This was obviously before I had kids. I had time for this. I used to play Mortal Kombat 3. Mm-hmm. Okay. It was like, and they really kind of looked like robots almost. You know what I mean? And they were like these weird characters, and you would like punch in the certain buttons and they go, get over here. And like they pull you and like, you know, pull your guts out or whatever. But it was very cartoony, you know, like when the blood, it was very cartoony. And, but it, you know, it was fun and kind of addicting and, you know, but then, of course, 4 came out and 5 came out and all that, and they got more and more realistic, and I just wanted nothing to do with them. And because it just got too gruesome. I mean, I thought that what I was doing was gruesome enough, you know? And I totally noticed that I was amped up after playing that game. Like, there is no question I had adrenaline. Sure. I was like, you know? And... you know, there's no denying that is affecting your chemistry.
Absolutely.
You know, but I never, once all the other ones came out, I stopped playing it. But, but because, wow, I mean, I started noticing, I was in an arcade or something and I saw like the later versions. I'm like, this is so graphic and real and
gnarly and the first person. Yeah.
But even, sometimes they are not so zombie-ish. Like the blood's not green anymore. It's like red and it's pulsing and oh my God. Like the whole thing is just so gross.
It absolutely affects you. It triggers. And again, and your brain can't tell the difference because your brain starts shooting out those chemicals, those same chemicals.
Yeah. Chemicals are chemicals, right?
So I've never been a video game guy, but I love horror movies and extremely violent action
shows. I don't know how you do it.
But there's like, I don't know. I didn't get into that stuff till I was older.
Really?
Too. Like when I was younger, I didn't look at horror movies because I was too afraid, you know? Mm-hmm. I watched action movies and stuff, but I wonder, because I do kind of watch it ironically. I don't mean to come off like a hipster douche, but, you know, it's
too late.
It's kind of, it's kind of funny, a lot of these movies, because they're dumb.
Right.
But, like, I got into it old enough that intellectually I knew what I was watching was dumb and silly. Mm-hmm. But I just wonder about, like, where developmentally, when is it too young to see that stuff? Like, and what does it do to a young brain, you know, outside of just desensitizing?
I mean, we know that there are people letting their 6- and 7-year-old boys play war games. Like,
speaking of horror movies, I've sat next to 7-year-olds in, like, Freddy Krueger movies. Right. I mean, I swear to God.
Right, yeah. And you have 8-year-olds who are playing Grand Theft Auto
Oh, my God, I know.
As a matter of fact,
God.
The last survey that I saw, it said close to 25% of 8-year-olds
have high ground.
You know, because they've got either an older sibling with it or they go over a friend's house, and so, yeah.
Right.
So,
do you know about Grand Theft Auto?
Oh, yeah, no, it's my friends, like...
drug dealers and prostitutes,
yeah.
And it's just
crazy.
Well,
they're grown-ups, and they realize the ludicrous... element of it, like the inappropriate element of it as grown-ups, and they know it's not real and it's just dumb kind of
right,
weird
wish
fulfillment.
So what about the
right.
six-year-olds that
it's
are playing
a couple of
game.
Things that come to mind. First of all is that, you know, an appropriate amount of fear, right, or scariness can be helpful. I mean, that's why we have you know, think of Grimm's fairy tales. That's why we have fairy tales. And you mm-hmm. have, if you think about it, those
oh,
are
yeah.
really, you know, violent and horrible. And but what it does is it teaches kids that there is violence in the world, but that also that there is somebody that can come to your aid and that can help you, and that you can go ahead and defeat, you know, evil. And so, you know, those fairy tales are actually, you know, they serve, you know, a psychological purpose to help mm-hmm. us deal with sort of the violence in the world. And scary movies can do the same thing on an appropriate level.
Mm-hmm.
You really do need to know your kids, and there depends on the kind of violence. You know, there is that violence where it's, you know, cartoonish, you know, or is it, you know, really, you know, is it very realistic? You kind of have to know your kid. I mean, I think that mostly, you know, probably. And what's different, too, is nowadays, you know, an 8-year-old today is very different than an 8-year-old 20 or 30 years ago, because they have been exposed to so much media.
Yeah.
And so much violence in the media.
But do you think they are any different when it comes to emotional intelligence than they were 40 years ago? You know what I mean? Like, they've got more input. They're different in certain ways. They're a little bit more world-wise, maybe, in a covered way. But I don't know if the emotional intelligence, the emotional capacity of an 8-year-old is really that different than it was 40 years ago.
Right. I don't know. You know, in some cases, maybe even less so. I mean, if you're looking at, you know, if your definition of emotional intelligence in this situation is being able to kind of know your feelings, knowing mm-hmm. what your feelings are and handle your feelings and also be able to, you know, deal well with the people
around you. Have some resilience. Yes.
You know, then I don't know. I mean, maybe not, because, again, there are worlds are very much, you know, controlled, and we're kind of, and kids are placing themselves in a world where they have all of the control, where mm-hmm. they can push a button and make something happen. And then part of what happens is that when you then leave that world and you can't push a button to make something happen the way you want it to happen, then you can get really frustrated and really, you know, have a really difficult time and get, you know, get very anxious or worried or just upset. You know, I call it the sort of the baked potato theory of happiness, is that, you know, it used to take 2 hours to bake a potato, or whatever, an hour and a half
right.
to bake a potato, right?
Now we get impatient with microwaves.
Right, you put it in the microwave, yeah. and you sit there, and oh my gosh, and it's because it's not happening the way you want. You have this expectation,
yes.
and when you're not having that expectation fulfilled,
right,
that's where the misery comes from.
Right, when a text doesn't go through, it doesn't go to the satellite and back
yeah.
immediately, like
yeah.
Louis C.K. says,
yes.
you know, like... falling apart because
right.
it didn't make it to the, you know,
right.
and space and back.
And when you spend so much time in an environment where all you have to do is, you know, click, you know,
mm-hmm.
to go turn left or go right, you know, hit these buttons, and things are happening, boom, 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 automatically.
Yeah.
And you get out in the real world, it's like sitting in a traffic jam.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
know, and think of the frustration you have
sure.
in sitting in a traffic jam. Is you can't go where you want to go. You can't do what you want to do. That's what, you know, fosters that frustration.
So do you think that this will be embraced, like instead of fighting it, we'll go with it and we'll sort of make school a little more like a video game?
No, I think we're doomed.
Or are we just screwed? I mean,
here's the problem is that, look, there's nothing wrong with technology. Technology is wonderful.
No, it's awesome.
Okay. It's... you know, how do you use the technology? And can mm-hmm. technology be used? You know, and I think what's scary is that, you know, especially, you know, look at LAUSD, where they went ahead and spent $500 million, and I'm probably only off by a little bit, on buying iPads for everybody, because right. they think, oh, right. well, that'll be great, okay? And then what happened was is everybody was hacking, you know, the iPads and, you know, and playing games and not using it the way they wanted to use it.
Duh.
And, and also, shocking. Right, and they think, okay, well, somehow it's going to help make it easier for the teacher. It doesn't. So right. it's, again, you know, using that, you know, this powerful tool, you know, if it right. falls into evil hands. So, look, it's hard. It's, you know, you mentioned before about empathy. Can you teach empathy? Yes, you can help and teach empathy with certain types of games. You can't. It's all about, it's about moderation. It's also about what are you doing with it. It's about, like anything else as a parent, you need to monitor. You need to be in control. You need to be in charge of as best as you can, of, you know, what your kids are being exposed to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the other thing that I was thinking too, what's happening is that with attention, because, you know, it can help with certain kinds of attention, right? Like with these video games, it's like paying close attention to things that are happening, you know, quickly.
Mm-hmm.
But where
details,
but where it, where their problem is that, is trying to get any sort of like long-term understanding, like of a concept or something like that. And that takes, you know, there's a process of having a short-term memory move over and being consolidated into long-term memory.
Right.
And what happens with, especially with the way people are going, flitting from one thing to the next, the other thing to the next, is that you're interrupting that ability. You're interrupted because you're moving on to something else. We have such
yes.
a short attention span that it's moving on to, so you don't have an opportunity for that information that you had to actually be consolidated and to go into long-term memory.
Mm-hmm.
And so it really does affect your memory.
Absolutely. And when you work with kids who, you know, they need to read a paragraph, like a whole paragraph, and then they have to kind of show you that reading comprehension, my goodness, if it takes them like 45 seconds to read that whole paragraph, that's too long. You know, I mean, they just haven't had to pay attention that much if they're used to the constant change and stimulation.
Right.
Even cartoons and shows and the way they're made, the way they're edited, the way they're cut, the way everything just moves at a faster pace.
But that's interesting because, you know, I'm a movie junkie, so
mm-hmm.
I watch a lot of movies with my son. And, you know, the difference between movies now, when I show him older movies, he gets way more fidgety. I'm like, no,
this
is a great movie, but, you know, it's not like choppy editing. The camera's not shaking.
It's because you've been conditioned that way.
Yeah, yes. Yeah, exactly.
And if you watch, you know, get videos that are supposedly for, you know, like kids, you know, like Life on the Farm, and you'll see mm-hmm. there's so many cuts and so many things that it's nothing like actually being on a farm. I mean, actually, take your kid to the farm, have
right.
him pet an animal, or even just see what's going on.
Yeah.
And again, going back to that, how do we learn about the world? We
mm-hmm.
learn about the world through our experience.
Yeah.
And if we go ahead and if our experience is about, you know, lights flashing and sounds, you know, going on, that doesn't teach us what the
and
real
constant
world is like.
And constant feedback. You know, there's this constant feedback with Instagram and you know, I'm gonna put up this picture and then I'm gonna have people like it or dislike it. And, you know, the on one hand, that's, you know, there's actually like a selfie addiction now
mm-hmm.
problem that's been named. It's because people get very addicted to that immediate feedback, and they start to constantly, it's sort of like body dysmorphia, like to the
max,
yeah, to the 8th degree, where you're looking for feedback and basing your self-worth on how many likes you get
uh-huh.
on a photo,
mm-hmm.
you know, and, you know, also opening yourself up as a teenager, certainly, to mass criticism and horrible, horrible comments.
Right.
And that was an issue for me mm-hmm. with my daughter when it came to, it was some chat thing, but Instagram became this forum for bullying and abuse
right.
and criticism and making girls feel fat and, you know, just I think it was Tina Fey on 30 Rock at one point, and this was a long time ago. She said, "There's just so many more ways to get rejected now.
Right.
My God, you can be rejected via email, via
and publicly. See,
and
that's
publicly,
also the big difference,
and it's
too.
Brutal,
it's especially with
I'm not saying anything anybody doesn't know, but I mean, it's just so awful to watch.
Yeah.
It's
right.
so sad.
Well, that's why I'm not letting my kid onto those things right now.
No, there's a.
I don't know. What age did you guys start letting your kids do Facebook and Twitter?
Well, you know, the irony is that you actually supposedly have to be 18 in order to be on Facebook.
Yeah.
But
oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't even know that.
The kids don't like Facebook anymore, anyway.
Actually, well,
Facebook, but they like Twitter,
for old people.
Right?
Yeah, it's
right.
for old people.
Yeah. And
old folks.
Yeah. What the part of the problem with posting things online is that it lives there. And it lives
forever.
It lives there forever.
Mm-hmm.
And cyberbullying is a real problem. It is. And so as a parent, you do have to be aware of that. You do have to teach your kids, etiquette, right? What the fact that, you don't share things online that you wouldn't want to be advertised.
And these are opportunities to teach your children empathy and an awareness of their own empathy. Empathy is different from sympathy in that sympathy, you can feel sorry for somebody or feel bad for them for what has happened. Empathy is more the feeling of really being able to put yourself in their shoes, really being able to understand their experience as if it was your own. Like, if I do this, this will hurt her and make her sad, and really having a sense of, I wouldn't want to feel that way, right?
Part of the problem.
Okay, definition.
And part of the problem with not all things on the internet, but a lot of things is the anonymity, is the
yes.
fact that you can go ahead and have a screen name or no
yes.
screen
mm-hmm.
name with certain things, and just post crap, horrible, mean, nasty stuff,
mm-hmm.
just because, and nobody knows that it's you.
Yeah, it's modern road rage. Like before, people
true.
Used to flip people off from their cars because they felt so safe. Now
I think
just,
it's spineless. My name is on all my postings. You know who I am, but I don't like that anonymous posting stuff. It's spineless.
It's it ain't cool.
If you got an opinion that you really think you should share, you should have the balls enough to say who you are, and it's my opinion.
But teenagers,
mm-hmm.
Right.
They're kind of incredible in their ballsiness, in that they'll be identifiable or not.
Right.
Either way, they can still be really brutal. And I think, really, in that case, I just think the only damn solution is just to not let your kid have an account if they're experiencing anything like that.
If they're undergoing some sort of bullying,
it's
or
like,
anything
no,
like that.
Well, we're gonna
yeah, it's
get
good,
out.
It's good to disengage.
Why?
And also to not respond to. I mean, I do counsel people that
it
just do not respond, let it go. What happens is that it triggers again that what we all have is this self defensive mechanism
mm-hmm.
where we want to make things right, or we want to get back at whoever it was that. It hurt us,
mm-hmm.
and it really it sets off these wars, whether they're Twitter wars or Facebook wars
mm-hmm.
or Instagram wars or anything
yeah, and
else.
That's a very, very difficult lesson to teach a child, a young mind,
mm-hmm.
that you're just feeding in, you're doing what they want you to do, you're feeding into it,
right.
And they're like, but no, I have to say that that's not true,
right.
or I have to say, and it's.
You don't have to attend every fight that you're invited to.
Exactly.
Well, and there's also the possibility that your kid is the bully.
Oh,
yeah.
Sure.
This sounds even worse to me.
Yeah, and I used to say to my daughter, she had one friend that they would kind of have these little emotional, girl spats,
mm-hmm.
via text. And I said, don't text anything that you wouldn't be okay with her mother reading.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And it's important. And you bring up something that's really important, and that is that I do think that as parents, we should be reading our kids'
text. Oh, absolutely. I'll pick up my kids' phone.
We have to be NSA. We have
right.
to be our NSA for our
and
kids.
And you should know your kids' passwords.
And I think that, I think that they should know that you have the right to read their stuff.
Right.
Because that is, somebody told me a long time ago, I think it was actually when I was pregnant, and he and his wife were older and their kids were, wonderful, sweet, highly functioning adults. I'm like, how'd you do it? So we would talk about parenting a lot. And one of the things that he said that I always remembered is he said, my kids, I made it very clear, this is not a democracy.
Mm-hmm.
I have the right to go through your stuff. I will read your diary. I will do anything I have to do to keep you safe. If I think I will respect your privacy, but if I think there's anything wrong, anything at all, I will go through your stuff.
Right.
And that's the deal, because
right.
it is my job to make yeah. sure
that's
that
your
you're
job.
Safe.
That's your job.
And I just, people say, oh, I could never read my child's diary. I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, do you, what if they're depressed?
Right,
what if you
exactly.
need to, you know.
What if they're not communicating what's going on?
Right.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I just think.
Oh, yeah, it's part of your job.
And I'm not saying do it without telling them.
Well,
I'm not saying do it.
I don't necessarily, I also think that sometimes it's okay to not tell them. What's going on? Because sometimes you get more information. Depends on the
right.
depends on the situation.
Right, you got to look at. You have to assess
okay?
that yourself.
I actually think that it's probably a good idea for them to not know whether you are seeing it or you're not seeing it, because sometimes information it's valuable for you to have it and not necessarily bring it up at the moment, but just to have you.
So then, do you think you would not ever? I mean, if you're giving a child a phone, let's say you know they get this as a gift and they're getting the ground rules,
right?
Do you think it's worth saying even if it's just one time, like, just so you know, this is, you know.
Yeah, you let them know.
This is private unless I, you know, but it's not.
Well, no, it's
you
not
know?
Private.
Yeah, it's not private.
It's not private. See, that's
you know?
The thing. It's
right,
not,
I mean,
I'm
not going to go and check her text every single night. I know it's not going to happen. But if I think there's even the slightest thing going on, I have actually done this. I'm like, let me see your phone,
right.
because I need to know. Like, are you in the middle of something here that you don't want to tell me about?
What
you
want to let them know is that you are going to – you're in charge,
mm-hmm.
right? And that there are – these are the rules, and that occasionally you will check up on things
yeah.
to make sure
mm-hmm.
that, you know, she's following the rules.
Right. And that – and because I care and I want
right.
to make sure you're okay and you're not in – some kind of ugliness,
right.
you know, that's painful for you and that you can't get out of.
Right.
You know, our kids get, they can get into some rough
well,
stuff.
Well, they learn a lot from us, you know,
yeah.
and that's also another really important thing about technology is that, you know, like so many things in parenting, we really have to model good behavior. And unfortunately, we don't necessarily model really good behavior when it comes to dealing with technology ourselves. I mean, we may not be stuck, you know, in front of the, you know, the computer playing, you know, first-person shooter games all day. But, you know, all of us, you know, myself included, has that pull of, you know, checking my emails, looking at, you
mm-hmm.
know, what's going on? Did I get the text? All of that.
Yeah.
And so we become very distracted, and they see us doing that. And, you know, it has an effect. It really
oh,
does.
Absolutely. I mean,
yeah,
my younger daughter gives me crap about it all the time. She's like, Mom, get out of your phone. I'm like, I'm sorry, I'm just putting something on my calendar. Because my calendar, my notes, I literally write on my phone.
Sure.
You know, and everything. And then, you know, I'll say, oh, somebody just texted me, they have a problem, and I got to attend to it. And
it has an effect also.
And I feel terrible, but.
Right. And it has an effect with younger kids, too, even, you know,
yeah.
babies and infants. You know, they can tell when somebody is, you know, texting or on something. And when they're not getting that attention, that
mm-hmm.
eye contact or that attention,
mm-hmm.
That, you know, they're not experiencing that attachment, which is so important for
right.
parenting and for in order to be able to have relationships, it can be a real problem. And it's something that we have to, you know, be wary of and
mm-hmm.
put the phone down
right.
and step away from it.
So really,
it
first and foremost, it's kind of on us to model, you know,
the
non-phone
thing. I have to tell myself
thing.
To do that all the
yeah.
time. My wife and I had that conversation, too, at one point. All right, when we're eating, you're not looking, you can't look at
right.
your phone. You
got to right.
put the phone away, you know.
Yeah.
Or when we sit down and watch a movie with Colby, we're putting the phones down.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which sucks, because if the movie gets boring, God, you just want to grab that phone.
I know. Because again, it's that constant entertainment.
Yeah. It's the constant entertainment.
Yeah.
It's also
I know,
it's
we're
the,
all guilty of
it's
it.
It's the anxiety that it brings up. I mean, think about, you know, most people can't go to the bathroom without taking their phone with them because the, you know they think, well, also it's like multitasking and everything else. Or standing online. You're standing online. What are you doing?
That's a New York thing. He means standing in line.
Oh, standing in line. yeah. So
just teasing.
You know, I was at the post office this morning, and it was a big line, and at least 85% of the people in
of
line
course.
Were all looking at their phone.
Well, wait, because that is that bad? Because standing in line in the post office is horrible. So why not the
why not get something
then?
Done?
That's like a good
right?
place
yeah.
for the phone, right?
Here's what can be bad about that. I'm not saying that's bad just in and of itself. What can be bad about it is if you can't just be in the moment, wherever you are, and just without having to fill it up with noise or fill it up with activity, then yes, that's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
You know, part of dealing with stress is to not always be in that moment, to actually give yourself some time to breathe, give yourself some time to actually experience what's going on, to give yourself a chance to not, again, be part of some other little world. And so I do think that if you're not giving yourself that break, if you never have an opportunity to just breathe and look out the window or look at somebody else or just doing that, then you are creating that, you're adding to that chatter.
Oh, no, I agree. I mean, yeah. I mean, you go to a park and everybody's on their phone in the park and you're like, well, there are trees and stuff. That's different. But in the post office, fuck the post office.
Okay, but let's say, okay, then I'm going to give you and everybody else a challenge. The next time you're online at the post office. See, online has a different meaning now. So you're just standing in line.
In line,
yeah. That's what I'm saying. So the next time you're standing in line at the post office. At the post office or some other dreary place.
I don't want to go to the post office.
The DMV or something like that.
Oh.
Just take, like, if you start to reach for your phone, wait 2 minutes. Delay it 2 minutes and don't reach for your phone. And just kind of observe the people working there and wonder about their lives.
I would say,
or something.
Yeah.
You know.
Take 10 deep breaths.
Right. Anything.
At least. You know, and do that and see. Part of the problem, you know, you mentioned earlier is depending on how you react to, you know, asking your kids to get off, a machine, has something to do with, well, is it a problem or not? Also, think about yourself. If you're starting to feel, if you have an urge to go ahead and to check your email and give yourself a little bit of time and then see what that
feels like.
If you're really itching to do it,
you're
going to
learn a little something about thyself.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's good advice.
It's very, very true. I think that's good advice. So we want to model it. We want to set some boundaries, set some limits.
Right.
It's not the end of the world if you can't text at the table.
Nope.
You're going to be okay.
And
right.
You don't have to go to the post office. That place sucks.
I'm sorry. Did you say something? I just had a text come in.
All right. Well, thank you all for listening. Thank you, Jackson and Todd, for being here.
Thanks for
Dr.
having
Verity.
Us.
Oh, it was my pleasure.
Again, you can find me on Facebook at Sophie Venable. I'm not a big tweeter, but you can follow me on Twitter at MILF Talk. And if you want some modern advice and inspiration, you can find my book, MILF 101, on Amazon.com. So remember, no texting and driving. Thank you for listening.